Ladies and gentlemen, we're back with the Unspun program, episode number 2, with Joe Atwill and myself, Jan Ervin.
And, good evening, everyone. Looking forward to it very much.
Likewise, Joe and I decided that we better do a show regarding the Trivium method because since we do a lot of research, we should probably explain to people what is the methodology that we use to reach conclusions essentially with our work.
Right. I mean, the Trivium is a pedagogical approach. It's describes the method of training basically young patrician class individuals from the Middle Ages on. It resided in Jesuit training as well, and as far as I know, there are still some little pockets of it. But basically,
Why don't you address that? Since you mentioned that, because you went to school as a young boy at a Jesuit school in Japan.
So you should. Well, I had this unusual circumstance where my family moved to Japan when I was entering first grade, and we were there for about 4.5 years, and I went to what was then called St. Mary's Military Academy. Now it's dropped the Military Academy. And it was actually run by the Christian Brothers, but in the chaos following World War II, most of the teachers were Jesuits that were working with the Christian Brothers to establish the school, which mainly catered to the children of ambassadors. There wasn't really any non-military presence in Japan when we moved there. We were one of the very first families. And so I went to the only English-speaking school around us, had Jesuit teachers, and they, from the very beginning, I mean, from the very first day, brought in the concept of fallacy. And they would inspect your rhetoric basically after every statement that you would make. And if they saw that that you had posited a contradiction, they would have you try to explain why you had made the mistake, try to get you to understand how to have a better structure of rhetoric. And this was, it's kind of hard to remember, but this really wasn't a class. This was just the way the school operated. In other words, it wasn't like we would sit down and study logic. No, we never did that. Because mainly we studied the Gospels and Greek and history and things like this. But that instruction in the Trivium, in the relationship between logic, your senses, and grammar, was just expected to be understood. It really was what the school is about. And the funny thing is, Jan, I really had no idea about this. It wasn't until I went to American public school in the fifth grade that I realized that this was totally screwed up, that school made no sense to me because
the public school made no sense.
The public school made absolutely no sense to me. I mean, I literally was like a lost individual. I couldn't talk to people. I didn't know how to communicate. It was like a crisis.
It's like you and I now with all that we know today, trying to communicate with normal people. So we just put it out there and hope that people can pick it up,
Right. I just wanted to say, Jan, that one of the reasons why it's such a pleasure to talk to you is that to me, the world of reason is the highest level of spirituality. And I know that this seems contradictory, but it's only because we've been given false history.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, and I'm sorry to be long-winded, but I just wanted to say that when you connect your senses, the world, and logic, when you have that experience, your mind has a clarity that is the purest and finest spiritual experience a human can ever have. And it is one that is a solid platform. If you compare that to the myths of most religions, of the magical thinking of modern spirituality, so-called, they have nothing to offer. These are cul-de-sacs that the oligarchs have created, as to dumb down the population. And that's why when you have friends that you communicate with and enjoy the process of exploring the fallacies and of the sense that can be made between one another, I just feel that it is the real religion. It was what was taken from us. The oligarchs took that form of spirituality, the real spirituality, which is connected to our senses and to reason, and then they replaced it with something they could control us with, which is mythology and magical thinking.
Now, I'm going to agree with you, and I'm going to add a few statements here to answer a few of the points that you made. Now, some people will think that, well, you know, Joe Atwill, he was in a Jesuit school from first to fourth grade, so therefore he's a Jesuit and a part of this Jesuit conspiracy. I'm going to say that I've known you for several years. I don't see anything like that about you. You went to public school after fifth grade. Other than learning the trivium, most of us don't remember much of what we learn in first to fourth grade, and I don't know what they would have taught you from age 5 to age 9, essentially.
Well, I do believe the Jesuits are a compromised organization. I mean, I've studied them since then, and I think that Loyola was dirty, as I would use the expression. In other words, I think he was a lifetime actor, and I think that the organization was set up at the behest of the oligarchs. I think it has engaged in skullduggery consistently since its inception. But I also think it had a hell of a pedagogy. I didn't experience any, you know, one thing people always ask me about was there any, pedophilia? Were there sexual innuendos or were the priests inappropriate? And I just honestly can't remember any of that. What I remember is I really liked the priests. I liked all of them. I thought they really engaged you. You know what I mean? They made you feel like you were a real person and that you had real opinions and they mattered and they cared about how you structured your attempt to communicate. You know, they were always trying to improve communication. And when I got back to the U.S., not only did I not find it among the people that I knew, I didn't find it in the teachers either. You know, I never found that sense that I had with them. So I really look back at them as having, I just really thought they were wonderful people, and I enjoyed being with them, and I enjoyed the process of trying to be reasonable. And when I got back to America, got into public schools, yeah, there wasn't any Jesuit skullduggery, but there sure wasn't much learning, at least the way I would characterize learning.
Well, you know, and exactly that. So now let me address your next point regarding the trivium is actually the true religion. Now, interestingly, and I'm going to place a few caveats here because I don't want people to think that we're trying to sell a cult or something. And the trivium is quite the antithesis of that.
Now,
however, grammar, logic, and rhetoric were compromised and turned into Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. Deus, or God, took the place of truth in the center. Now, if people go to the Trivium Education website, and I have this on screen here. I'm going to put this on here now. But so this is the Trivium logo here. We have grammar, logic, and rhetoric. And then this, not this. This, not this. So, and what the Trivium does is it essentially acts as a corkscrew to go around and dig deeper into information or come back up. But depending on the situation, how much grammar you need. But the truth is in the middle, and that is the same logo that comprises the Christian Trinity. Now, truth is, to me, the ultimate reality or spirituality, whatever you want to call it. And I will say that the quadrivium, and ladies and gentlemen, you can study the quadrivium up here. Let me just get rid of this. But the quadrivium actually does show things in the universe that we can't explain and does show that something sort of like a god or whatever you want to call it is there. But to try to put it into words or into a book or try to explain it beyond that statement essentially is what turns it into a cult or a religion. But the trivium is essentially how we gather all information in the universe. It's simply the first part of it is asking who, what, where, and when of any subject. So this is, you know, if you say why, Joe, why? And Joe, your automatic response should be, well, why what?
Why what? Right.
Right. So the why is over here. So it should force you right back to the general grammar phase. And I'm just going to add here, you know, cover these points quickly. General grammar is different than specific grammar. General grammar deals with the facts of reality, that who, what, where, and when of a subject, whereas specific grammar deals with the components of a specific language, putting words together, having proper grammar and sentence structure, etc. So general grammar is the components that you're dealing with in reality that make up the subject that you're writing with. And then the next aspect of the trivium is simply the why of the subject. So after you've gathered your information, your who, what, where, and when, then, and not until then, you go to why of a subject. And what essentially this why aspect is the processing of the who, what, where, and when. You're processing it. You're looking for fallacies, for lies, and contradictions. And then the last aspect of the trivium provides the how of a subject. And you're explaining to others exactly the process, the exact steps that you reach to come to a conclusion on any subject. So general grammar is discovering and ordering the facts of reality and comprises basic systematic knowledge. And then logic, or why, is developing the faculty of reason and establishing valid or non-contradictory relationships among facts, and is systematic understanding of that knowledge. So you cannot have understanding before you have knowledge. You have to have knowledge, and then you can proceed to understanding. Yeah, and then
I didn't mean to interrupt, but I don't know where you actually got this description. Did you create it, or was this something?
This is Gino Denning's original description. Okay. Who brought me the trivium back on the Gnostic Media Podcast, episode number 49, back in
absolutely 2008. Well, let me right. Can I just give you the
let me just finish this last one.
I'll wait till you're done. Go ahead.
All right. So, and then how is is applying knowledge and understanding expressively and compromises wisdom. Or in other words, it is systematically usable knowledge and understanding. So knowledge, then you can understand the knowledge, and then you have wisdom about the knowledge and understanding. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that as I experienced it, it was always presented as senses, your senses.
Right.
Logic, and then exposition. So that you would make sure that it was whatever the phenomena was something that was actually connected to a sense. In other words, you had to be able to taste, touch. There had to be some.
Absolutely. Well, the who, what, where, when is absolutely dealing with the five senses.
Right. And so that was how, I guess for little kids, this is how they, you know, this is a little more abstract, but for little kids, it was senses, logic, which was basically no fallacies. That was how logic was given to a first grader, was no, you can't say that the tree is in your backyard because the tree is in the schoolyard. And the schoolyard and the backyard are not the same place. And when you say that, that isn't true. That is not something that comes from a sense, right? So that was how in the first grade. And then exposition was describing the senses and the logic of application of trying to understand what the senses had given you. And so then you could talk about it.
Exactly.
And so now
so well, your exposition is essentially just rhetoric, right? Well, in this case, classical rhetoric.
Yeah, but actually I hadn't seen this. The way you have it here is much clearer, but it really kind of brings me back to when I was a kid. And I can see that that's what they did, because for a kid, it was just the senses, you know, no contradictions in your thinking. And then now you can talk. Now you can you can have exposition about this process. And so what you have, you know, and I just wanted to encourage our listeners to actually go to this site and go through these processes, because There is a tremendous bonus at the end of it, even though it may seem like, oh, I know about logic. Believe me, you can always sharpen your skills in this. And in our world, there is obviously a malfeasance in the government. And with this process, you're basically able to defend yourself against sophistry. You can
exactly
defend against people who are using clever arguments that when you put them in the acid bath of the trivium process, at the end of it, you can see, wait a second, the son of a bitch is lying to me.
Well, we should probably be careful.
That he's lying to me or he's bringing false logic to me for some purpose. But sophistry can be easily exposed if you have this automatic process in your mind. And I would just say, Jan, anyone who watches our media, who is exposed to, you know, the networks, the American mainstream media, or are for God forbid, you know, like movies and TV shows, you really need to have this as an automatic process in your mind, because there is just a nonstop assault.
Absolutely. Let me address a few points here. Now, one of the things that people will claim regarding logic or the why aspect here is that logic can only be applied in argument or debate. Now, this is part of the sophistry that's come out of the classical trivium. Now, we should make clear that there are two versions of the trivium. There is the classical trivium, which has been used for social control against the masses for many hundreds, if not thousands of years. And then there is the trivium method, which is what this website is here up on the screen. And the trivium method lays open the classical trivium, exposing how it works and how it operates. And it essentially levels the playing field so that you know, everybody is on an equal you know, footing when they get involved in information.
Right. Absolutely. Well, good point. And you see, the sophistry has turned logic upside down. They have studied this. They know the basic method, and so they're able to use clever techniques to be able to give the impression that they're being logical. And
absolutely.
And so you need to, you know, basically in our world, you need to defend yourself constantly against sophistry.
Yes. Let me just add here, Joe, that the sophists have even gone so far as to argue that reality doesn't exist and that you can't know truth. Now, the statement, you can't know anything, you can't know truth, is a statement of fact or a statement of truth. Well, how do you know that you can't know anything or that you can't know truth? So, you know, people who state that you can't know truth, they are actually lying. They're trying to manipulate you. Now, this is part of the key in understanding how the trivium works, but the trivium will also, especially the trivium method, also exposes that there are no contradictions in nature. That a contradiction, if you see a contradiction in information, you don't just throw up your hands and say, well, you know, I can't know anything. We can't know anything. Opinions are like, you know what, and everybody has one, and so we should just give up. Ladies and gentlemen, when you spot a contradiction, what that should tip you off to is that there is an error or a lie here, and you simply need to dig deeper into the information. So if you hit a contradiction in the why aspect or in the logic aspect, that should automatically shift you back over here to the logic aspect. To the grammar, to the data gathering aspect, to the who, what, where, and when, until you have removed that contradiction. Once you have removed that contradiction, you know which point is true, and then you can move forward again. You know, and just to give a little quote here, this is one of my favorite quotes. It's from Sir Thomas More. It's here on the website. But it says, "For if you, the rulers, suffer your people to be ill-educated and their manners corrupted from their infancy, and then punish them for those crimes to which their first education disposed them, what else could be concluded from this but that you first make thieves and outlaws and then punish them?" And so this is really key, because by not teaching people the proper application of the Trivium Method, and I'm not talking about this NVC garbage by Passio, I'm not talking about, Daryl and these people, and I'm not talking about this nonsense veganism trivium that Passio has created out of it and tried to distort it, etc. What I'm talking about is the true classical Trivium Method. This is what they withheld from us to keep us from being able to think critically and to be able to process properly information. And there's, you know, even a Webster's 1893 dictionary definition up here on the website. And then I should also mention to people just very, very quickly that there are a number of audio files here down the front that people may study that go into the Trivium Method and what it really is and explain it. And as well as up here on the website, we have the Trivium broken down. Now, again, the Trivium is general grammar, Aristotelian logic, and classical rhetoric. And then there's also an area up here on the website for teaching children the Trivium. And I, you know, we do recommend that parents learn it first, but all of the information and what to do from there is listed on the website.
It's absolutely critical to teach it to children.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, you know, and I've even seen newspaper articles where educators, the article was from Texas several years ago, where the educators thought it was a bad idea to teach children the Trivium because they would be able to spot the lies of the adults.
Right. Can I give an example that just occurred a few hours ago?
Absolutely.
I was watching a documentary on Bob Weir, the Grateful Dead.
Right.
And he was describing his relationship with Neil Cassidy, who is a, you know, one of the merry pranksters, LSD maniac, basically. And they had videos of him behaving as an insane person, but he was held up as a kind of a great spiritual leader. And so Weir had written a song. His very first song was about Neil Cassidy. And it describes that Captain Cassidy has control of the bus. And the bus is the Merry Prankster bus further. And it was Bob Weir's first song. It became one of the very first hits of the Grateful Dead. And so Weir then said, you know, I wrote that song on this particular day, and that was the day that Cassidy died.
You know what, Joe, your audio is adjusting itself again. I had hoped we could get the mic auto adjust turned off this week because we had some complaints about that last week. It's a setting in the audio in the Zoom.
Anyway, we'll have to deal with it another time. But anyway,
I apologize, audience, for that.
Sorry for that. Anyway, you have Weir's claim that he wrote this song about Neil Cassidy, and it occurred on the day, the very time that Cassidy was dying in the train tracks in Mexico. And then he says, so naturally what had happened is very clear. Neil's spirit was loosed from his body, and he came and gave me this phraseology that I ended up, you know, putting in the song. And so then the documentary rolls forward, and I, you know, my mind kind of went, you know, to a halt, and I thought, well, wait a second, you know, obviously this is impossible. There is no way that that these events occurred. I mean, you know, this guy didn't die and then his soul fly to the Grateful Dead house in Haight-Ashbury to write this stupid song. Why would he say this, right? So the question, why? Why would he make this claim? And then in the very next statement, Weir started going on and talking about the benefits of LSD, the benefits of magical thinking. So now you can have it. There's a context that your senses can understand. You can see sophistry. Because now you're saying, wait a second. He is making a claim, a magical thinking claim, something that is anti the what the senses experience, saying that a soul came from Mexico and helped me write the song. Why would he say this? Well, it's explained in the very next statement he makes, where he starts talking about the benefits of LSD. What he's doing is he's trying to take you away from your ability to just relate directly to your senses. And he's doing this because he wants to promote and to sanctify the giving of the LSD to all of the kids in San Francisco that the Grateful Dead was involved with. And then this goes back to the article we wrote, Manufacturing the Deadhead, which was the reason why I watched the documentary, because I was curious about what Weir was saying. But this is also an example of, you know, people who are trained in the Trivium method are better protected against sophistry. We're just harder to fool.
Absolutely. Now, one thing that I want to say here regarding all of this peddling of magic, we see this with the whole quantum physics. You know, and going back to what I said a moment ago, there are no contradictions in nature. There are no two quantum physics professors that ever agree with each other. And these contradictions are an utter failure in their logic. And people like Amit Goswami tell you that quantum physics is the merger of science and religion. Well, one of my favorite statements, and I believe I got this from Leonard Peikoff from the last section of Leonard Peikoff's Introduction to Logic series, which is listed on the in the study materials up on the Trivium website. But that is, mysticism is the tool of tyrants. And whenever someone is appealing to magic, you need to question this. Now, this is something that the first time I heard it, I thought it was absolutely absurd. I thought Peikoff was a wackadoo, and obviously he was associated with Ayn Rand, and you know that made him even more of a wackadoo. And so, well, you know, and I thought about that quote for years, and I couldn't disprove it. Every single thing that I looked into after I heard him make that claim panned out. Now, I should make clear that if people get involved in the study materials and reading the books that are listed up on the Trivium website and listening to all of the audio into the lecture series and everything that's up there, it's about a 2-year study. Now, some people have told me, well, you know, it's just who, what, where, when, why, and how. I don't need to study anything, you know, and it's actually, you know, there's a formal logic class. You need to be able to, you know, you should go through the audio on the website as well as the logic books, not just one. There's a Trivium book. There are several Trivium books up there. There are several different things up there. All of these things should be studied, but you're exactly right, Joe. You know, Ken Kesey, Tim Leary, Gordon Wasson, all of these psychedelic heroes of the 60s and 70s, they all used mysticism as their tool. Now, a lot of people will ask, well, doesn't the Trivium method destroy intuition? You know, because people are afraid of having their intuition destroyed. Well, what I want to say to that is that the Trivium or intuition is actually the very first step that engages the Trivium method. So when you are only going by intuition, let's say if somebody is lying to you, you might have that, a funny feeling in my stomach. Okay. And then you're not quite sure, but if you have the Trivium method, and especially if you've studied it for the full 2 years, it becomes fluid in your mind and you can, you can see this stuff automatically. But what happens is that the intuition then engages the Trivium method. And then instead of having that implicit funny feeling, then you have explicit knowledge of exactly how you were lied to and manipulated. So, okay, I'm at a car dealership and this car salesman, he lied to me. I'm not quite sure, you know, hey, you're going to get all the hot, sexy women if you drive this car. Oh, it's an appeal to emotion. Or, you know, if you don't buy this car, it's, you know, something or other, some appeal to fear or something like that. And we'll cover logical fallacies before, you know, we finish this episode. But when it takes you from implicit knowledge to explicit, then you know exactly how you were lied to and what you can do to protect yourself and your family. That's what this is about, is protecting you and yours. And this is why it's really key to begin to teach children the trivium method as well, and not the classical trivium that you hear floating around in the New Age groups. Since Gino Denning and I put this out, there's been a tremendous effort, ladies and gentlemen, to squash the trivium method since I put it out with Gino Denning in 2009. A tremendous effort.
I just wanted to comment on the difference between the intuition and knowledge. And I would point out that you described a kind of a sensation in the stomach, but that was just a description in general of the sensation of intuition. And I would point out that this is a very good description of a low order of spirituality. And if you work through the process, you can actually see this. This can actually be clarified.
And not the high order of spirituality.
Exactly. It's been confused. Right, exactly. Because then when you process that sensation and you come to comprehension, and then you come to exposition where you can share that with someone else, well, that experience of comprehension through the trivium method and exposition is clearly, there is no way that is not a higher spiritual construction than the one that you entered from when you had just the feeling in the stomach. And this is, even though this may seem like people go, well, that's, pretty much obvious, but you know something? This is what has been sold to us, as part of what's been sold to us as spirituality, is this trusting your intuition, trusting magical thinking, letting God handle it. All of these sophist claims are all a big lump of intuition, essentially, that's just being given to people to keep them from the real spirituality.
Without being processed.
Exactly, because that's where you're vulnerable to the oligarchs. That's where you'll give control, religious, political control. You'll give up control because you have been basically fooled. And if you would just continue working until you've got comprehension, then you're going to find that your exposition back to the oligarch isn't going to be, become a slave. It's going to be something that will be defending yourself, because you'll have seen through to the lie. You'll have seen through to the motivation. You'll have understood what you were involved with. And Jan, this whole world, the whole Western world, is just a lump of media-controlled sophistry.
And
we are like slaves who are building our own prison.
Absolutely. Well, people are so used to, sorry to go back to Plato, but this is the introduction to Plato's Republic, the allegory of the cave here. People stare at the shadows on the wall and they think it's reality.
Right.
And, and this is key. But one thing that I want to mention, Joe, is that the trivium does apply to all topics. There's not really any topic that it can't apply to. Now, an artist will say, well, if I use the trivium, I'm going to use my ability to make art. Well, so let's just give an example. You want to know what type of canvas you're going to use. What are the color paints you're going to use? What size brush do you want to use? With music, how about this? Well, and the quadrivium is arithmetic, geometry, music, and astronomy. Okay, so arithmetic is first, geometry comes out of arithmetic, music comes out of geometry, and astronomy comes out of all of those. Now, arithmetic is number in itself, geometry is number in space, music is number in time, and astronomy is number in space and time. And so this is, it's not going to hurt your ability to make music. It's going to increase your ability to make music, because it's going to give you a full comprehension of where music notes, how they divided the chords, all of this stuff, how this stuff even came about. So it's not going to hurt your ability to have more information and understanding how to perfect your art.
Right. And I think that art is one of the sophist elements. As the CIA developed a whole approach to art to break culture down. You know, I mean, look at like rock and roll music, how that was used by the CIA.
Absolutely. Know? And for those who haven't picked up on my 7-part series with Dr. Hans Utter, I do recommend that everyone study that as soon as possible so that they understand exactly how music can also be used for social manipulation and control.
Right. And beyond that, when you return to art and in a non-sophist or non-manipulative sense, I think what you'll find is that, for example, music is a can be understood as a kind of communication.
Absolutely.
And when you basically understand the emotional structure of the music you're creating, when you're able to actually give exposition to it, people say, oh, I don't want to talk about the art or the music because I'll lose the magic. That's right. You'll lose the magic and you'll create real art, because then when you go into exposition, you'll be able to understand, you'll have understood the language that you're using, because basically art is a way to communicate. And when it is real art, it is a way to communicate ideas that are often too subtle to be able to express through words. And so you use the direct empathetic connection. You basically try to make people feel these things so that then the context of the idea, you know, you can actually have the empathy of the other person. You can understand how the other person is feeling. When you have art that is not able to be exposed, that cannot you know, lend itself to exposition. I mean, generally, this is an art. You're talking about craft. You're talking about either the finger painting of a child who isn't able to, you know, develop anything of meaning, or you're just talking about a craft. You're not talking about someone who's really trying to communicate something, because if you are, then that can be very easily subjected to the connection into the senses, into logic, and also be able to be talked about.
Now, one thing that I want to emphasize is that when you apply the trivium method, as opposed to the classical trivium, the trivium method is all about maintaining consistency with reality. Now, I had hoped to have Bill Jocelyn with us this evening, who has done a number of shows with Joe and I. I think he's done about 4 shows with Joe and I together and probably another 3 with myself. So hopefully we'll get him on soon, because he always has a lot of good insight on these things. But when you can see people trying to break consistency with reality, trying to appeal to your emotions using nonviolent communication, which I've exposed with Bill Jocelyn as being CIA created under MKUltra Subproject 97 with Carl Rogers, etc. All of these things are used to take away our consistency, essentially, with reality, to break that consistency. So, anyway, you have anything to add to that?
No, that's an important point, because the way that the consistency of reality has been destroyed in our culture by the oligarchs is through primarily what can be called neuro-linguistic programming. In other words, they attack our subconscious, and they know how to do it, and they have techniques developed to be able to basically to just create a kind of normalcy bias toward things which are destructive or illogical. And so, that's why, I mean, you know, these elements are much harder to detect, because they aren't just raw sophistry. They aren't just using clever, illogical arguments. They are attacking the subconscious. And last week we talked about the May 1957 Life magazine cover, which I recommend every single person who listens, who hasn't done it, go through the process, dig it up out of the internet, look at the little box, which contains a description of Gordon Wasson's trip to Mexico, which of course turned out to be subproject 58 of MKUltra. Recognize that what Life magazine is doing is giving a favorable review to a CIA project to basically develop the beginning of the psychedelic drug taking culture that was going to be in full force in 10 years, and then look at the three words that conclude the little box, which presumably are talking about another article, but in fact are directly related, which are an attack on the subconscious. It is the MKUltra neuro-linguistic programming technique. The words are teenage allowances. And once you know that the first part of the box is an MKUltra sub-project, and go to the Gnostic Media website and read the article Jan and I wrote called Manufacturing the Deadhead, and believe me, we don't just conjecture, we present the actual evidence that this is the, is an MKUltra project. Now, there is no chance that this is an accident. And what you're dealing with is a way to attack our subconscious. And this is done in malfeasance. This is done through the government. These are the media is being controlled. So when Jan talks about a disconnection of reality, this is when you have that strong sense, which the Trivium method will develop, then when these little oddball things occur, you're a lot less likely. You can't completely just automatically defend yourself against these attacks, but you will have that sense of, wait a second. Right.
Well, to use an analogy, it's like in the Matrix films, when the lines are coming down the screen or whatever, when you've had a good 2-year full study of the Trivium method, you can read that stuff coming down the screen there. It just gives you that.
That's a great analogy. That's right. You have a sense of it, and you're just so much more solid in this world. Look, we're in a evil world.
Absolutely.
I mean, evil people have gotten control of the political system and the control of the media. And so you are always under attack. A citizen is always under attack. When you wake up, when you read the newspaper, when you go outside and see the chemtrails, when you look at the TV, the trolls on the internet that are agents that are hired, to throw.
Absolutely, yeah.
So this is always going on. And this is why I really want to underline Jan's suggestion that someone go through and spend a couple of years, because when you train yourself, I know, if you've never heard of this, it may seem like a really eccentric request, but I guarantee you that Jan is giving you the best advice you'll ever have, because if you put the time in to develop your mind in this way, the world will be a lot safer place. You will be a lot
for
less
everyone,
vulnerable. Right?
It's like Gino Denning told me once. And this was a Buddha quote, I think, that when only one remains ignorant amongst us, they bring the whole of the world down with them. And let me just, I want to go back to Bill Jocelyn for a moment now. Since he couldn't join us, he sent a few notes, so I would like to read those here. And then I also want to cover a topic that's very important, which is how people can trick us by putting logic before grammar. So let me just read these notes from Bill, and he says, most would say that today the problem today comes down to the improper, corrupted school system. This is true, but it is too broad of a statement to really shine light on the problem. For instance, scientists say the issue is science literacy. Others say literacy, period. The problem is in a lack of philosophical literacy. You can have a good, adequate education right up to a PhD level, yet still not be able to come up with a unique idea or to be able to identify a bad one. The issue isn't access to knowledge or exposure to ideas. Our current school systems have that. It is philosophical literacy, which is completely removed from schooling and modern day common sense. People go on about critical thinking. However, this is only one aspect of philosophical literacy, categorization, distinction, and identification in grammar, and is not covered in critical thinking, but is in the Trivium. Philosophical literacy is not about having an intimate knowledge of past thinkers and philosophical enlargements. This is knowledge of philosophy or knowing about it, not understanding it, although going through historical arguments will help develop understanding. It is about how to do philosophy. It is active, a skill, not a knowledge base. The trivium is the first and biggest step toward acquiring this literacy and gives a strong foundation and framework for moving beyond the trivium into more nuanced aspects of philosophy, which in his opinion is beyond the trivium, but moving into the complexities of it. Objectivist epistemology is a great second step, especially Peikoff's, which I just mentioned, Introduction to Philosophy, as this goes into actual arguments and demonstrates how they are baseless. However, this is not the end all, but with intimate knowledge of the trivium, and I should say trivium method, and a good grasp of epistemology, one has a foundation to dig in full tooth into any issue, topic, or deeper philosophical discussion with a strong framework to be able to see yourself through it on your own without an appeal to authority, and to come to your own conclusions. It is being, come to your own conclusions with which anyone else who is remaining consistent with reality and not using sophist rhetoric should be able to come to that exact same conclusion and verify yours. And then he finishes with, it is being able to read the great minds of the past and disagreeing with them for good reason, for your own reasons.
Yeah. I'm going to give another example so people can see, the wisdom of the approach, and they can also see how the attack is structured. Going back to A Course in Miracles, which starts out claiming that human clinical psychologist, Helen Schuckman, started to channel Jesus Christ.
Right.
Actually be able to experience his mind.
Right. Jewish CIA agent channeling Jesus Christ.
Right. Yeah, that's believable. But anyway, so she was outed, and this actually was one of the ways that I sort of got into studying, modern mind control, because I was asked so much about neo-Christianity. But anyway, their organization, they created a powerful organization. And it was taken over when I think they either passed away or just gave up the reins of it to a guy named Kevin Wapnick. And he was a priest, right? Oddly, he had come from Israel and he had converted to Roman Catholicism and then went to work for how do you pronounce her name?
Schuckman.
Schuckman and Thetford. So Ken Wapnick is... I mean, this is kind of absurd, right? I mean, right off the bat, there's curiosity. Well, anyway, he wrote about Abu Ghraib, the torture camps, right? Because there was a sex scandal that occurred when the pictures came out about the sexual abuse. And he used that as an example of what Helen had learned from Jesus. And he wrote, and I can't quote it exactly, but I'm very, very close here. He said, this is a really great example of how Helen learned from Jesus that when you find a great evil, you just have to let it go. You can't engage it with more violence.
You never address it. You never expose it.
But look how clever the sophistry is. I mean,
yes,
look at
absolutely.
That you've got Jesus. You've got a psychologist channeling Jesus. And now you have a priest telling you that really, if you get angry, if you want to do violence somehow to the people who torture and sexually abuse these prisoners, then you're really going right down to their level. Jesus will keep you above it. You won't have an emotional reaction. So look at how the sophistry works.
Yep.
Take now the emotion out and the rational out of understanding something like this. And I just thought of this because when Bill was going through the process of linking into past philosophers, I was thinking, yeah, and it's also on the other side, it defends you against the current sophists,
Absolutely. Now, one thing in regard to current sophistry, and we do, you know, we only have about 10 minutes left, so we also need to cover some of the logical fallacies just to give people some examples of how to spot liars. But one of the key ways that these sophists use to trick us is to put logic before grammar, or to try and explain why. Now, at the beginning of the show, I said, if I ask you, Joe, why, you automatically say, why what? Now, this is actually a trick of the classical trivium and fooling and manipulating people. What they'll do is they'll get people to try to answer why before they've asked who, what, where, when. Now, if you try to ask why or answer why before you've asked who, what, where, when, you're left to two things. One, an appeal to authority, or two, magical religious thinking. And so, you know, you're going to channel this information. You're going to, you know, channel it from Uranus or the Pleiades or wherever it comes from, you know. And so, you know, this is actually how they do this. They get you to substitute this channeled ad veracundium fallacy for real knowledge that you can verify with your own senses. Now, also, it's key for people to understand that when they get us to no longer trust our own five senses to bring us information, it shatters our self-esteem, our ability to trust in ourselves to find and verify information and to know truth. So the trivium method...
That's a really excellent point. Self-esteem is not well defined. Self-esteem is when you lose the capacity to engage in the process of your senses, logic, and exposition. That's what we mean when we say we lose self-esteem. When we lose the ability to engage reality, that's what that phrase really means. And that's, I'm glad that you actually made that clear with that statement.
Now let's, while we have a few minutes left here, we've got about 8 minutes. So let's dive into some of these logical fallacies. Now, there are about 20 logical fallacies, ladies and gentlemen, and up on the, you know, I'll just show this up on the Trivium website, excuse me. There, up on the store page, we have logical fallacy bookmarks. They're also up on the Gnostic Media website, and these cover about 19 or 20 of the key logical fallacies. It breaks down exactly how the trivium works. It goes who, what, where, when, then why, then how, and then the quadrivium, and with the logical fallacies on the back. And of course, ladies and gentlemen, you know, Joe and I haven't mentioned that we do all of this off our own buck, and we appreciate any donations and support from the audience for bringing you this information, as well as any purchases of bookmarks or whatever you can provide. And both of us, I think, take donations on our own sites. But the logical fallacies, just to cover a few of them here, for instance, you know, ad hominem attack. You know, I'm going to go back to the trivium bookmarks because this is real simple. We can just cover these. And an ad hominem is against the man. It's attacking the speaker instead of his argument. It's, oh, you know, Jan, you wore a blue shirt on Tuesday night show. You couldn't have anything valid to say. Or Jan, you're a jerk to sophist liars, so therefore your arguments are wrong.
Yeah, I'll give an example of where people misunderstood ad hominem. If you, just as an example, are wondering how someone was able to make an egg disappear, and you point out, someone points out, well, he's a professional magician. I mean, he makes this, he does this for a living. This is ad hominem. It's to the man. But it is not using ad hominem as a red herring. Jan expressed the fallacy correctly with the statement. He points out that when the statement when the man makes an argument, you use the man as the red herring to move away from the argument, to away from the logic. There are times when the man himself is the issue, and then it is not the fallacy of ad hominem.
Right. Well, you know, if you have a robber in your house, calling someone a robber is not an ad hominem. They're robber. There can be real morons, real sophists, real robbers, real murderers, etc. And so, you know, but you just mentioned another fallacy, Joe, there, right then. You said the red herring fallacy. Well, what is a red herring fallacy? A red herring fallacy comes from the old days when they would teach hounds in England how to hunt the fox. Okay, so what they would do to try to distract the hound away from the fox is they would drag a fish across the trail to see if they could get the hound onto the trail of the fish instead of the fox. And so this is the red herring. It's diverting an argument by changing the topic, okay? And then, you know, there are over 200 fallacies. People always think of new ways to lie. But if you know, and fallacies, I should also mention, fall under three categories of relevance, presumption, and ambiguity. And that should all be up here on the Trivium website. It's here, relevance, presumption, and ambiguity. And so the logical fallacies are also broken down into two categories, formal and informal. Formal fallacies are based strictly on the logical formation of an argument, which is deductive. Informal fallacies are the most commonly recognized and easiest to learn, take into account non-logical content of an argument and are inductive. They are false for epistemological, dialectical, or pragmatic reasons and typically fall under three categories of relevance, presumption, and ambiguity. The first formation of logical fallacies comes to us from Sir Thomas Aquinas and the Scholastics. But understanding, I'm going to change that. Memorizing the logical fallacies, at least the 19 or 20 that we have on the bookmarks, is key. I recommend learning more of them. I mean, there's really ambiguous ones like the no true Scotsman fallacy. That's like, oh, well, no real Scotsman would ever do that. No real Christian would ever do that. No real whatever would ever do something like that. There's guilt by association fallacies. Jan Ervin knows Joe went to Jesuit school when he was in first grade, so therefore Jan is a Jesuit, right? Appeal to tradition. Well, you know, it's always been done this way, or, you know, and to use an example that someone gave me earlier today, and they're going to be upset at me for doing this, but, well, tattoos have been used for thousands of years, so therefore it's okay to have to, you know, and it's not to necessarily bash on tattoos, and that, you know, Joe and I talked about the Manufacturing the Deadhead article last week that goes into this stuff and the Native revivalism about it, which it's not the one thing. There are many things that they use to try and trick and fool us. But up here on the Trivium website, I have a number of logical fallacies websites. This one has 90 logical fallacies listed on it. And there are a whole lot more. I think one of these websites maintains almost 200 logical fallacies. Boy, I just had a light starting to die there. And this one contains, these are fallacies in Latin. It's also important to learn the Latin name as well as the English name, like ad misericordiam, which is an appeal to pity. Oh, you know, it's actually an appeal to emotion, essentially an appeal to pity. But it's, you know, you can't do that because I'm gonna cry if you tell the truth or whatever the case may be. An appeal to ridicule. That's another really important one that is a very common tactic. Joe, your work is wrong because.
These people should spend time with these. This would be very, I think, honestly, it's if particularly if you're not familiar with them, everyone will benefit, and you'll actually feel the benefit almost immediately. Spend an hour with these things, and then just try to spend the next day maybe just perhaps being aware in the speeches and the communications you have of where fallacies appear, and I think you'll see that. You get a crystallizing of reality. It gets clearer.
And let me just add here, we have about a minute left, but it's if you keep a list of the fallacies, and I've got a printout card up on the triviumeducation.com website, or please order bookmarks. That helps us a lot. But if you spend a few minutes every day practicing the logical fallacies, you can listen to radio commercials, TV commercials, etc. Practice with your family, with your spouse to spot the logical fallacies. After about 2 months, you'll be fairly proficient with them. And then what happens is at about the 2 month mark, you can begin to filter the logical fallacies.
If you're a married couple and you're having problems, you won't need a psychotherapist.
There you go. You
simply use these and you'll see that communication will be much more real. I just wanted to mention, to communicate with me or buy the books, come to postflaviana.org or caesarsmessiah.com. Always happy to take questions about anything Jan and I are talking about.
And triviumeducation.com, gnosticmedia.com, gnosticmedia.com. Thanks, everyone, and we'll catch you next week. Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye, everyone.
The pursuit of a free, fair, just, sustainable world should be the focus of every person on our planet. The reason it is not is because people are kept distracted by the illusions and deceit propagated by the corporately controlled mainstream media. In recent years, the rise in truly informed, savvy researchers and journalists who have all taken to the air in various capacities has given rise to a new genre of media. We have seen the explosion of truly free and independent media, and thus the need to create an ethical live broadcast network that facilitated these brave and tireless souls became apparent. With a great amount of research and meticulous planning, Conscious Consumer Network was created. CCN is a first-of-its-kind broadcast network that is specifically dedicated to free and independent media with absolutely no government control, corporate sponsorship, or advertising. The live broadcast network runs full-time with an average of 25 shows and live broadcasts a week. The high-definition live stream is free to view and is accessible from any computer terminal with online access, including laptops, tablets, smartphones, and smart TVs. All shows are archived onto YouTube and are freely available to view in order to educate and inform as many as we can without imposing monetary limitations. CCN was successfully launched on the 1st of January 2015 and has gone from strength to strength as we have improved and increased the capacities and functionalities of the network, as well as an ever-rotating and improving lineup of content which is broadcast daily. CCN is blessed to be the home of some of the hardest-hitting, most cutting-edge, truly educational and informative materials. Catch interviews, reviews, and talk shows from the many different and beautiful perspectives from CCN's family of interviewers and broadcasters. Since the 1st of January 2015, we have produced over 800 shows. We have over 2 million YouTube minutes watched every month, and we have an average of 1 million hits a day on CCN's website. CCN is viewed in over 147 different countries and hosts broadcasters from 5 different continents. The time has now come to generate funding to keep CCN on the air for the duration of 2016. The total sum needed to continue broadcasting for 2016 is $60,000. This budget includes the replacement of computer equipment, the acquisition of secure servers, which are most needed as we keep getting hacked, plus the renewal of the broadcast license fee for 2016. This is a fraction of the annual budget used by mainstream media networks producing a similar quantity of content. This is what makes CCN so successful, unique, and accessible, is the ability to run a project of this size and reach on such minimal resources. CCN does not claim ownership over any of the material we produce and broadcast, as we firmly believe that information is the common heritage of all beings, and thus, CCN belongs to you, the public, and it is up to you all to keep CCN going. CCN would like to thank those who have contributed to the network in the past with resources, content, information, time, and energy. We thank you for supporting free and independent media.